Welcome to the Steve Stein Guitar Podcast, brought to you by GuitarZoom.com. If you want to improve your guitar playing, keep listening. If you want to improve even faster, go to GuitarZoom.com, where you'll find all of Steve's premium courses, masterclasses, and memberships that'll help you quickly and easily improve your playing. Now, here's your host, Steve Stein.
Well, hey, welcome everybody for joining us. I am here with my buddy Joel Stevenette, and we're going to be talking about what he does and what he's done in his life. And I'm very curious. Joel and I have become friends over the last couple of years since the COVID thing. But to be honest, there's just so much I don't know about Joel that I thought it would be fun to talk. Joel is most certainly an industry guy that's done a whole lot of really cool things. So let's just start about the COVID thing. So as far as COVID, when it hit, how did that affect your career, your day-to-day life?
Well, much like everybody else in our industry, everything was flipped upside down. Tour dates, event dates, corporate dates, everything just vanished in the wind. And as soon as that happened, I think a lot of people were left scratching their heads and thinking, now what? Or maybe some people took the approach of, well, let's see what happens, or we'll just kind of wait and feel out what's going to happen in life in the weeks to come, the months to come. And when that happened, I immediately started calling everybody I knew that owned a studio. I realized that travel was done, live shows was on hold, and the people that maintain work, set up shop in their house, their closet, their basement, ramped up their studio. And that's what I did. I just started calling people and made myself readily available for anything and everything, and also set up a place in my home where it allowed me to do some videos and do some drumming and sessions and things like that. But most of the stuff that I did were at other studios throughout the valley in where I live, and everybody was keeping distancing and all that kind of stuff, but it worked out. It wasn't ideal on a lot of fronts, but it all worked out because you just make it work. You can't just roll over. And I don't know what your thoughts are, but music is one of those things where it doesn't matter what you do in life, that passion never leaves you.
Right.
And so you have to maintain creativity and that spark. And we're around enough like-minded people in our area where it's like they felt the same way. And so we just kept working.
Well, and that's the thing, especially it seems since the digital age. As a musician, I learned early on, and just out of necessity, that diversification was key, because you'd play in all these bands and you'd be doing session work. And I was not only a guitar instructor, but I was a Montessori instructor for Montessori education. I worked at NDSU, our local college. I was a professor over there for a number of years. And you just try and do as much stuff as you can. The hope is you're 13 years old and you want to be a rock star, and that's how you're going to live the rest of your life, but it doesn't
always
work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's just to tell a quick story. So during COVID, I got this idea to start doing some remote collaborations with people, because I was like, everybody's holed up, and I had been studying mixing and editing and stuff for a while, and obviously doing my own videos and things like that, but wow, it'd be really fun. So I started making a few videos with some friends and whatever, and I was like, you know what I need is I need to find a drummer who's readily available and interested in doing something like this. Because the thing about hiring somebody to record is that it's always good to go to people that are A, really talented, and B, have availability to record. Because there's a lot of people that are really talented, but they don't have a studio, or they don't have access to a studio, and they don't own any gear. And so then that becomes kind of an issue. So a mutual friend of ours, Scott Garrison from DW Drums.
By the way, I love that guy.
He's great. I totally agree.
He's great.
Yeah. So I got a hold of Scott with the idea that Scott might do some drumming. Because again, my whole thing is it's not about getting the best players and what, it's just getting friends together and making some music and having some fun. And I love Garrison. So I got a hold of him and he's like, nah, I'm not really interested in trying to do that. But he goes, I think I got the perfect guy for your personality. So he hooked me up with Joel. So I called Joel out of the blue, and I'm like standing outside my yard, and I'm like, dude, you don't know me from anybody, but I'm just telling you, this is what I'm thinking, and it'd be fun if you'd be interested. And Joel was right on with that. So that's where that started.
Isn't it amazing, though, that in life, you could not know the person from Adam's house dog, but we all speak the same language. It doesn't matter where we live in this amazing world, but it's like, you called me, we started talking, and all of a sudden, we're laughing, we're sharing stories, and we're just thinking, well, yeah, let's rock, man. Okay, what's the first song?
That's right. And it's funny because when I was younger, and you just live around, and we'll get to your story because I have a whole kind of all kinds of questions to ask you. But for me growing up, you just know what you know. You live in an area and you never really get out of that area. And when you start entering into the music industry and you get to know people, it's like that's half the fun is the travel to see the friends in the industry that you don't normally see. When you're a kid, you think it's all about meeting your idols and whatever. And when you get older, you start realizing it really isn't about that at all. It's more about all the people that make this thing work and seeing each other at NAMM or seeing each other at trade shows or whatever it might be. That's actually the fun of the whole thing.
I love attending NAMM. And if I have a studio session scheduled around that time, I usually try to bump them and just say, oh, I've got a previous commitment in Anaheim, California. Can we postpone that a week?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but, I love hanging out with people and hearing everybody's story and what's going on in their life and their musical endeavors. And then the gear is almost secondary.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. All right, let's just start kind of getting into this because I'm really, really curious. So the one thing we're going to do is we're going to go back. We're going to talk about the beginning of your, not drumming just yet, but just music in general, your infatuation with music. I can remember being a little kid and I had a 45 of a song called Living Next Door to Alice. And it was by a band called Smokey. And very few people seem to know what it is, but I would listen to that record over and over and over, just listening to this same song. And for me, that's where my music journey kind of began, was with that 45. But for you, when you think back, where was your first infatuation with this music thing?
Oh my gosh. For some reason, at the age of 3, I would set up pots and pans in front of my mom and dad's big wooden stereo console. And I remember that it had like that little wooden lattice, those pieces of wood strips on the speakers. And yeah, when you get that thing rocking, they'd all vibrate. But I remember Can't Buy Me Love, Beatles, listening to the Beatles. I remember listening to Herb Albert and the Tijuana Band. And then, by the way, I grew up on a farm in Alberta, Canada, back in the 70s. And so back in the 70s, it was LPs or vinyl records and 8-tracks. And so the vinyl records that we had in the house, that's the stuff that I listened to. And in Canada, they have a Canadian version of the band Chicago, and that band is called Lighthouse. And it was a horn band, and I just listened to that over and over and over again. And I think I was about 6 years old when I got my first taste of what I thought was the most amazing thing I'd ever heard, was the first Boston album and the song Smoking. And I remember in my brother's Ford Econoline 100 van, 3 on the tree, blue crushed velvet, diamond velvet stuff on the ceiling and on the walls on that van. And we would crank that Boston cassette everywhere we went, even more so when we'd head to church on Sundays.
Sure.
But that was really my first thing and my first love. Unlike today, where everything's so accessible, back then, when you had an album or something that you connected with, you played it hundreds.
You burned it out. That's right. Gosh, you're so right. It was funny, too, because Sunday after church is when my dad and I would go in my room and he would take out his records and we would listen to the Beatles or we would listen to Alice Cooper.
Oh, my gosh, Steve. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So now you're listening to music. When do you make the transition to start playing an instrument? And was drums your first instrument?
Drums was my first instrument. I went from pots and pans to getting a little drum kit when I was 5 years old, a kick drum, a rack tom, and a snare, and a cymbal that was attached on that little L arm that you'd had to crank down in your bass drum. My little five-year-old index finger and thumb could never get that wing nut tight enough, so I had to tie a shoestring to the cymbal rod and then to the tom-tom, and it would lean slightly to the right so it wouldn't fall over. But if I hit it to the left, it would go right onto the rack tom. And so that was my first kit. And man, I played the heck out of that thing with the Beatles and Lighthouse and Boston and Boss Gag, a lot of Boss Gags. And when I say Boss Gags, I'm talking like Boss Gags and Band, the early stuff, the early 70s stuff. And it was just beautiful, an amazing time of just discovery. And I just couldn't wait to play every day.
When you're playing these drums at this time, how old are you about at this time?
5.
Okay, so is anybody showing you anything, or are you just trying to figure it out?
Figuring it out.
Okay, so here's a good question. And the only reason is because I actually got a drum kit. It's all boxed up sitting over here that I bought for my daughter. My daughter has thousands of dollars of guitar stuff, and she doesn't want to play guitar. She wants to play drums, which Gary's
she's very wise. She's very wise.
So tonight, as a matter of fact, I had to play last night with the FM Symphony, and now tonight we're going to set this up. So here's my question to you. When you first started playing, how did you know to hold the drumsticks properly or anything, or didn't you?
You know what? It started out with knives, with butter knives from my mom's kitchen, playing on the pots and pans, and I would set them up smallest to largest, and a lot of those pots, like colanders or whatever you want to call them, like the larger cooking pots, would have these lids, and the lids would have this round handle. They were made by a company called Salad Master. I remember that. And the lids had a steam release valve on them. And I would take those lids and put them upside down and put them in front of the pots. And when I'd hit them, the steam release valve would buzz. Bzzz.
Oh, wow.
It was intuitive. What's interesting, if I can back up a little bit, there's a song on Boss Gags and Band album, which I believe is his 4th album. And the song is called Flames of Love. And here I am, 5, 6 years old, listening to Flames of Love and just loving it. And I remember listening to the drums, and the drums, anytime the drummer hit the snare drum, I heard this, like this little ruffle. Oh my gosh, what is that? And at this time, I was playing bongos in front of the record player. And I'm like, boy, there's like that little ruffle, that little flutter sound. Oh, I think I know what it is. Well, I went to the kitchen, grabbed a steak knife, came back over, went to the largest head of the bongo, took that steak knife and just whoosh, right through the head and started cutting it. And so the little flap flipped up. So every time I hit the bongo, it went. And I'm like, oh, I think that's the sound. Well, come to find out many, many years later in life, those were ghost notes.
Oh, wow.
And so trying to figure it out, just kind of going, oh, wait, what? And just hearing all these nuances and all these textures and all these cool things and just trying to figure it out.
Isn't it funny how back in the day when you had records, and again, I'm not saying that people still don't do that, but because we didn't have the technology, we didn't have videos and all this other stuff to learn from, 90% of your learning came from listening because you couldn't see anybody anyway. I mean, maybe you had Night Flight or something like that that was on a Friday night or whatever the special was, where you'd see a video of Rush or a video of Kiss or a video of Kansas or something. And it was always at like 11 o'clock at night. So, but other than that, you had listening, and it seems our age group developed a really good sense, because I learned how to play by ear. That's how I had very minimal lessons when I was a kid. It was just trying to, like, I would listen to one of my favorite albums at the time. Well, I shouldn't say favorite, but one of the life-changing albums for me was High and Dry by Def Leppard. Because I was playing guitar at that point, so I would listen to something and I would take the needle off and I would go to my guitar and I'd figure out what it was. And then I'd listen to the next part and then I'd put the two pieces together. And of course, I would wear out my records. My records would always wind up scratched because I would sit and have to do this. But it's interesting that you say that, because I always tell students, I call it going underground, where you stop listening to lyrics and you stop listening to these other things, and all of a sudden you start listening to all of these subtle elements that are happening within the music. You can almost pull it apart and hear things inside there. And I don't believe that everybody, I mean, maybe everybody has that capability, but most certainly everybody does not do that. But it's a really trippy thing when you can go in and you can hear things and go, and again, I don't want to keep talking about me, but I had an experience with a friend of mine where we were both listening to music. We were listening to Speak of the Devil by Ozzy. And we got the speakers turned sideways, and you lay on the floor, you lay in between your speakers, right? And you're just tripping out. And he goes, wow, did you hear that bass line? And I was like, dude, why are you listening to a bass line? We're guitar players. it was profound to me because I'm like, oh, so there's other things I should be listening to than just the guitar. I hope you're enjoying this episode so far and you're getting motivated to take your guitar playing to the next level. Please do me a favor and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It'll help the show grow and reach more rock stars like you who want to improve their guitar playing. Also, I'd love to know what parts of the episode you liked, as well as what you learned. So please share this podcast and tag us at guitarzoom.com on your social post. And now, let's get back to the podcast.
I remember late at nights when the family would be home and it was not good for me to be playing drums late at night. So I would lay under my drum looking up through the tom-toms, listening to Alan Holdsworth or any of that stuff, and just being moved by the chords and the phrasing, and then hearing Jimmy Johnson play bass and Gary Husband on drums or Chad Wackerman. And it was just, oh my gosh, just a magical time where it's interesting that you share, this is what you talk to your students about. I do a lot of the same things where I'm like, the art of discovery or the passion of discovery and just listening to those albums or to the stuff that speaks to you. And Steve, I don't know if you're like this, but I've played with quite a few artists throughout my career. And a lot of these number one songs that they have, I've played hundreds of times, but I could not tell you what the lyrics are. The groove and what the bass player is doing and everything else, because that's where my ears go. Not to sound cheesy, but that's like where my heart and my soul goes. And just hearing the band where I can just focus on seeing the big picture, and then the vocals and the lyric are sparkling on top of that.
I totally agree with you. As a matter of fact, it's only been in the last few years that I've been going back and actually listening to lyrics on a kind of a different level, because I was the same way. For me, it didn't matter if I was listening to Stryper or Slayer or anything in between, because lyrically, none of it made any difference to me because I was listening for something else. And it's actually been maybe even in the last 10 years that I've been going back and learning. I had a professor once that told me, he goes, I can't say it word for word, but he said the true measurement of achieving a masterful musical status as a musician is when you can go back and listen to music casually, when you can go back and appreciate the music on a non-depth level, if that makes sense. Because as a musician, I can't go to bed and listen to music because I can't fall asleep, because I just sit there and I listen and go, oh, it's that chord progression. And so I have to listen to talk radio or something. But I've been learning how to go back and try and just, and one thing that I learned how to do in reference to what he said was I listen to lyrics more. So I try not to go deep. I try to stay a bit more on the shallow end of things. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but so I can hear the music the way a casual listener would hear it. And it doesn't happen all the time, but I do have experiences with that now more than, because when I was a kid, I never mattered to me.
I feel that way about the band Rush, because back in the day, people would be like, oh, but Neil writes the lyrics and da 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 da. And I'm like, and? Because it was all about the music. That was what was speaking to me. But now, the longer I live, the more in tune with the lyrics I am and the phrasing and what Getty is saying and how he's saying it and translating what Neil has written. I mean, it's a whole nother experience and pretty amazing.
Well, and here's another thing, and not to get Debbie Downer here, but when my dad passed away, there are songs that you hear after that that hit you and you go, you hear them in a completely different light and you go, okay, so this is what music can be for as well. It's not just on that musical level of being a musician and listening musically, but there's this profound thing that can happen with the music when something in your life happens and you're now listening to the song and you go, I've never heard that song that way before, but I understand now the power of what that is, and not just from a musical level, right? Just maybe a spiritual level. I don't know what it is. And so there were a number of songs that I could not listen to after my dad passed away. I couldn't touch him because I'd hear him and go, just be overwhelming for me. And then I'd have to turn it off. I'm getting better at it now, but it's kind of interesting how songs can do that too.
I have several of those songs myself where it reminds me of my mom or my dad or them being together, or just a time when I was at home, living at home growing up. And those songs can be tear jerkers or they can be joyful depending on how you're feeling during the day. But yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Well, let's keep moving here. I got a couple other things still going back. You're learning how to play. You've been banging on pots and pans. And so what age do you get your drum kit, like this, let's say a viable drum kit, one where you're proud of it? And, you know, it doesn't have to be the most expensive one, but my daughter here has this PDP kit sitting over here, right?
Which are so, great drums.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what age were you when that hit?
I was 11. We had just moved from Alberta, Canada, down to Provo, Utah. It was a dark, stormy night, and we were reading through the newspaper under the classified ads. And I'm like, Dad, oh, I said, Dad, I think I found a drum set. It's Rogers. It's white. It's, how many pieces is it? I wasn't sure what constituted a piece. Was it a cymbal? Was it a tom-tom? And he goes, let's go see it tomorrow. I'm like, Dad, let's go see it tonight. And it was just raining cats and dogs. And he goes, okay, let's go check it out. And my dad was just, yeah, just speaking of parents, he was just an incredible human being. And so we drove that night through the rain about 20 minutes away to this guy's house. And he had in his home, in his basement, this huge Rogers double bass drum kit. The sizes were 8, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15. Those were concert toms. The floor toms were 16, 18. Those were double-headed. Two 14 by 22 bass drums. And these were the Rogers Big R drums. And then it had a Dynasonic 5 or 5.5 chrome over brass snare drum. And then it had a canister seat. So you could take the seat top off and put hardware in there. But try lifting that up, right? And so it had the canister seat, all the hardware, the pedals, all the Zildjian cymbals. And I remember it was $1,900. And
which is quite a money, quite a bit of money.
Which
back
is
then.
A lot of money. This was the fall of 1979. And he goes, Joel, what do you think? He goes, you think you could play all those drums? I'm like, Dad, absolutely. This is unbelievable. And by the way, at the time I'd been playing a 5-piece Pearl Maxwin drum kit that I had had since I was 8 years old that my dad bought for me at a music store in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And so without hesitation, he goes, Joel, let's do it. He wrote a check, packed everything up in the van, still raining, got home. And I just remember staying up late, setting up that big Rogers drum kit. And I played that for years and years and years going through. Oh my gosh, when I was 12 or 13, Earth, Wind & Fire was the thing that I was playing to, and a ton of Kenny Loggins, like with Trizz and Bowden on drums, like Love Has Come of Age, boom, bunch, ba da da, or This Is It, boom, chicka, did it. Just all this amazing stuff. And then my buddy played for me this song that just changed the course of my life. And well, first of all, the first song he played was, he goes, hey, have you ever heard of Van Halen? And I'm like, no. And he goes, what? Really? He goes, check this out. Running with the devil. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. But should I be listening to this? Coming from kind of, you know, kind of a religious background. And oh my gosh, this is amazing. But it wasn't about the lyrics for me. It was just about, oh my gosh, this guy sounds like he's hitting the snare drum with spatulas and the guitar is amazing. And he goes, hey, have you ever heard of Rush? I go, who? And he goes, you ever heard of Rush? I'm like, no. And he goes, well, dude, he goes, they're from your home land in Canada. And I'm like, they are? And he goes, check this out. And he puts on the album and drops the needle. I was like, what on earth? What just happened? And it was the spirit of radio. And all of a sudden, the trajectory of my life just went right up. And it just so happened that I had this big Rogers kit where I just emulated, you know, anything and everything that was by Rush. And that was the start of that whole era.
Right. So a couple questions about that. So you had mentioned your dad driving you out there. Were your parents musical?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes. The whole family. So I come from a family of 9 kids. I have 4 sisters, 5 brothers, including myself. And we all sang and danced growing up, and we would perform at telethons throughout Alberta and doing all the dancing thing. And then we had a Hawaiian show as well, where I would play these LP fiberglass bongos, puka shells from the ocean, you know, and here I am like 7 years old with my little Hawaiian shell, my little tight puka shell necklace. And we would do these telethons and these little radio and TV shows. And my dad, he was a farmer. He also did a lot of construction and just had 10 different things going on all the time. But he had these hands that looked like catcher's mitts, just these man working hands. But dude, he played the organ, you would not believe, and the foot pedals, and he had a Leslie cab, and, you know, and he also played the accordion, he played the trumpet. He and my mom would do piano duets in our living room during the holidays, or my dad would play the accordion, and my mom would faux tap dance nylons on the tile floor in our entryway, or she'd pretend like she was backwards ice skating while my dad played. It was just music all the time. And then at Christmas, a lot of Christmas songs and carols, and my brother Daryl would bust out his classical guitar. And we just always sang as a family and performed as a family. In fact, I'll share it with you at some point. We have a family photo where we're all wearing white leisure suits with red sequins down the sleeves and the pants. And my sisters are wearing like these red patent leather go-go boots, and my mom's got this beehive hairdo, and my dad's sitting with his hair and sitting in a wickerback chair. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. So anyway, long story short, I had a Rogers drum kit. My mom and dad were actually very musical, but it was more so in the home and doing performances around Alberta, which was just,
well, that's
awesome. Blowing my mind right now. All the stuff that's coming out. So great. This is good therapy, by the way.
Good. All right. So you got this mammoth Rogers kit. You've heard Rush. So again, now we're a little bit older. Any lessons? Are you still doing it all?
My lessons were just listening. And I don't want to say I was self-taught, but it's like I never had any formal training, any lessons. Nobody showed me how to hold sticks. It was all listening. And I remember driving my parents crazy because if I sat in the front seat of the car and the AM radio was on with that center speaker vibrating in the dash, in the center of the dash on our 1977 Ford Country Squire station wagon, I was always tapping. So I just listened. And again, it wasn't lyrics for me. It was melody and it was the drums. And coming back to an album, Kenny Loggins, This Is It, that was the song that hooked me. And then come to find out that the first song on the album is Love Has Come of Age. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the drums on this song are amazing. And back then, if you just happened to get an album that didn't pass quality control and there was a little nick at the beginning, the needle always skipped on the intro of Love Has Come of Age. So I learned it with the skip.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh. And when I finally actually heard the full intro, I'm like, oh, that's how that goes.
Right. That's awesome.
But yeah, it's interesting, Steve, as we're talking about this, where the listening and just diving into records and reading the liner notes and who played what and who engineered and who produced and where they recorded and who the record label was and all that stuff was just like this unbelievable family tree of genealogy where you started connecting the dots. And then all of a sudden you grab another album and you're like, oh, wait a second. That guy just played on that album, or that guy played. Oh, wait, Glenn Johns produced this. And all of a sudden you start connecting this tapestry of amazingness. And I think it was because of that and the listening that truly, truly prepared me for a career in music and sessions and playing with other artists that where you had to play their songs like the album. So it was.
And then you top off the aphrodisiac of the smell of the album when you took the plastic off and you went. I talked to my youngest now who has this drum kit. Well, I bought her a record player. She wanted a record player for the longest time. So I got her a record player last Christmas. And so she's bought the Ramones, Fleetwood Mac, Queen, these are the albums that she's bought. And I explained to her the experience of exactly what you're talking about, opening it up and smelling it and taking everything out and just becoming for a while just part of that album, looking at all the pictures and reading everything and the thank yous and the liner notes and everything that was in there. The lyrics, if they were printed, sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't. But unfortunately, that's what's missing now with digital, is that you don't get, there's less of a connection, obviously, between the artist and the listener in terms of that. Of course, they can go out and read on Wikipedia and whatever else, but that experience of being able to open up that record and just for an hour, just lose yourself in everything that was going on visually and aurally at the same time.
I absolutely agree. And I remember on that note of opening up an album, and you'd always have that price sticker on there. And much like the new John Mayer album that just came out, which is amazing, they would always have that little hype sticker, the nice price in the 80s. And then as soon as you open the album and you would bring the sleeve out, you're just hoping that there's pictures and liner notes on there as opposed to just an album protection sleeve. But I remember feeling that way when I got Rush Signals and just staring at the liner notes and those digital photos of Neil Getty and Alex and just playing those songs hundreds of times over and over and over again with my little Koss Radio Shack foam lined headphones and then pressing the cups up against my ear so I get more bass response. Those were beautiful times, man.
Well, I think about how as a Montessori instructor, you teach children three things in terms of who they can learn from. They can learn from the teacher and they can learn from each other.
If you enjoyed today's podcast and want to learn guitar even faster, go to GuitarZoom.com and click the Get Started button to get access to courses that are right for your interest and skill level. Again, go to GuitarZoom.com and click the Get Started button.